The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McClain and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk TNT.
Now, we're launching the second hour of State of the Nation here, and as we do, I would like to remind you that today's News Talk is a live television and radio platform, and it is live 24/7. We have an amazing app, an awesome website, a chat room over there connected to the website. Big shout out to I and Eileen, Tequila Demon, and everybody else hanging out over there in the chat room. We love seeing you folks over there while we're live. So be sure and join us in that live interactive chat room at tntradio.live. And you know what? I've seen a lot of media, independent media platforms come and go over the past 12 years or so, even longer, just as a listener, but as someone participating for the last decade or more, I got to say, no one has ever done a show up like today's News Talk, and the capabilities that we run here are, I mean, they blow my mind even. So we do need your help. We've got a donate link up there on the website if you want to support us. We've got an amazing store if you want to buy some TNT socks or stuff for your dogs. We've got all that up at the website. We've got the amazing calendar, the What's on Events calendar. You can check out our documentaries, our episode links, schedules, email links if you'd like to email us. We do our best to get back to you if you email us. So get on over here and participate. We'd love to have you aboard over at TNT, whether it's hanging out in the chat room, wearing some of our merch, sharing our links. We really appreciate that. Now, Timothy, I gotta bring this one up because we just spoke with a guest associated with this case. I believe it was Ron Martinelli representing George Allen Kelly out of Arizona. So after 3 days of deliberation and being sent back twice by the judge, the jury has reached an intractable impasse. There's no verdict in the trial of George Allen Kelly. So Judge Thomas Fink declared a mistrial just yesterday and set a status hearing to April 29, in which the prosecution will either move to schedule a retrial or move to dismiss the case. So this is good news. I'm happy to bring some good news, Timothy.
Well, it's tentative good news, right? Because as you said, they're going to either move to dismiss or move for a retrial. And I got to think the government's going to try to get a better jury, you know, in its estimation, a better jury, and they're going to retry Mr. Kelly, which of course is a complete travesty of justice. But Brian, show me one case, show me one prominent case in the last 5 years that hasn't been a complete travesty of justice, from going after Officer Chauvin in Minnesota to going after Kyle Rittenhouse in Wisconsin to going after Mr. Kelly in Arizona, even going back in Oregon and all those cases where we had Lavoie Finicum assassinated by state troopers.
Alongside FBI and locals. Is a perfect example. And it's difficult. You know, this one I have some hopes for, but if they do move to retrial this, I'm going to have to say there's some sort of federal involvement going on there, because clearly after watching the videos that Ron Martinelli sent us, speaking with him about the forensics and the timeline of what happened, and knowing, you know, a little bit about the personality of the sheriff over there, who's pretty much behind this, him and that DA, they don't have a very good case. So if they move to retrial it, I think we'll have to assume that it is highly politically motivated. We already know it is, but maybe from a higher level than just the sheriff's office.
Well, because none of these cases have been good, right? The Kyle Rittenhouse case was a joke. All of these Trump cases are a joke. This case against Kelly doesn't hang together. And we already have evidence, Brian, of the DOJ working together with local counsel, either planting one of their employees in Alvin Bragg's office or coordinating with Tish James and others. We've seen federal involvement in all these cases.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to have to keep an eye on it. We're going to have Ron Martinelli back on to give us an update. He'll be the one to tell us what he thinks about a potential mistrial. So we'll be looking to get him back on the show.
Prayers for Mr. Kelly that they dismiss the charges and do not opt to retry him.
Yeah. This is an older gentleman, and he's in a very sticky situation just because of where he happens to live when the government happened to decide to just open the border for full-on international invasion. So we are with him for sure.
Well, it's not even that, though, Brian. It's not even that he's older, and it's not even that there's an invasion. The man simply did not kill the guy he's alleged to have killed.
Yeah. They can't prove it. They cannot prove it. From what we heard from Ron Martinelli, it's quite clear that they do not have a case. So we really, really are hoping that the right thing happens here. But of course, we'll have to wait and see. And we'll be very interested to see what Ron has to say next time he comes to join us. And hey, for a complete list of our shows and our schedule offered at TNT, all you need to do is visit our website at tntradio.live. You know how we are. We serve up the latest live news and current affairs presented by a host of credible and expert guests and hosts right here at today's News Talk TNT.
There's a lot going on, so it's important to stay informed and up to date.
Get ready, because here we go.
At the top, 30 minutes past and when it breaks.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, we are now joined by our good friend and colleague, Mr. Gene Valentino, host of the Grassroots Truthcast and GeneValentino.com. Gene, welcome to State of the Nation. How you doing today?
It's always great to be with the State of the Nation.
And what do you think of the State of the Nation today? You heard the story Timothy and I were just talking about. My goodness, a lot going on. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I take a step back and I think about this is unprecedented behavior, and the woke generation has no baseline to compare it to our parents or our grandparents. So they think there's some sense of normalcy involved in this. I see a diversion, a deflection, and a distraction again, gentlemen. You're going to tie up the 6 o'clock news with more of today's antics of selective prosecution, unjust prosecution of Donald Trump, which captures the attention of all the antics of Alvin Bragg and Letitia James, who've been going in and out of the White House with a guy by the name of Biden, who almost in a boastful way finds it humorous to be campaigning down in Florida right now, the residence of Donald Trump, where, by the way, this Letitia James prosecution should be held, because Trump's residence is Florida. Instead, he's down there, Biden that is, thinking he is going to make some headway with the citizens. And I think he is in for a rude awakening. Recent polls show that even the journalists are having trouble getting the strength, getting the confidence and the credibility over the finish line in the media. They'd rather listen to Donald Trump talk about Israel and all the and Ukraine issues, which we've talked about in the past and are in one sense unrelated, but in another sense they are related now, aren't they? The universities and colleges, which are being inundated with rhetoric funded by strategic forces behind Biden, that are bussing in these people to these colleges and universities. Jewish professors at the universities with passcodes and access cards being now denied access to their location on campus because they are Jewish. You've got all sorts of unjust and issues that are really a coordinated plan that has an unprecedented tone to it. When in history, since the Holocaust, have we seen such a collective, general attack on the Jewish nation, legal Americans, by the way, here in the United States, intimidated, threatened, In your face behavior, unlike ever before, gentlemen. I don't know what to say, except I think we have a new kind of war before us, orchestrated by the George Soros deep state, with the puppeteers behind Biden, letting him prance around in Florida right now on a campaign, while Trump is in New York in an unprecedented, unrelated jurisdiction against prosecutions staged against him. I don't know where to go.
Well, it's even worse than that, Gene, because just like we had a supermodel for a first lady that didn't get a single cover, not that she cared, not that we cared, but she didn't get a single cover. And yet for 8 years, we were subjected to linebacker shoulders and everyone oohing and aahing over the Empress's new clothes. Well, the same thing is going on now. They're oohing and aahing over, oh, Joe Biden really stuck it to Donald Trump by campaigning in Florida today. Gene, there were literally 10 people at that rally.
Oh, I know. Good catch, Timothy. I failed to bring that up. That's a good point. And you know what this is going to do, ladies and gentlemen? This will backfire to the same unprecedented level. Even if there is election interference again in 2024, it will not overwhelm the tsunami of voters coming in to reelect Donald Trump. You just can't create that much wrongdoing in the election process to overwhelm the vote that's coming Trump's way. I predict it. You heard it here. I think it's going to happen. Foreign leaders are anxious to see Trump back in place, not only to fix the problems abroad, but the one issue that's number one on the polls that we haven't discussed, the border. The border.
Yeah, that's a big one. And a lot of people are really upset about it this week after on Saturday, Mitch McConnell and his buddies up there on Capitol Hill stabbed everybody in the back by passing this enormous war spending bill with, you know, of course, no F's given about our problem here in this country. A lot of people are pretty upset about that. What was your take on that Saturday fiasco? And to be included with it, I have to mention the Ukrainian flag handout process. That really had a bunch of people's feathers ruffled.
That bothered me most of all. This is America, the last time I looked, and the day we forget that is the beginning of our end. But Brian, to your point, it's perfectly made. Look, we've had discussions on this in the past. We are not anti-funding Israel. We're not anti-funding Ukraine. But I do think when you so blatantly ignore the border, our southern border, and watch these terrorists invade our nation, and we sit there as if it's the Overton window in some sort of stupor. It's like the Stockholm syndrome. Beat me more. I guess it's okay. I mean, when do we say enough's enough and fight back and push these people back out of the country? You know, I jokingly said in a past interview, let's make Mexico the 51st state for just that reason. Let them stay right where they are. Let them have an income like comparable to ours by our standards, but let them pay American taxes. Let them be contributors, not takers, the way they are now.
Well, to answer your question, Gene, I think we're going to push these people out of our country right after we push these people out of our Congress. Because adding insult to injury, not only did they not fund protection of our border, they funded protection of Ukraine's border.
Yeah. Look, again, what did Speaker Mike Johnson know that we don't know on some of the intelligence briefings that caused him to stay on point? Boy, I tell you, that's a thankless job right now. I commend Speaker Johnson. I hope he hangs in there. I hope the attempts to move him out of that job fail. I think we need unity. Hey, it's a democracy, for crying out loud, not an autocracy. When do you get it 100% your way? You go into these roles in our Congress, and you win on some, you lose on some. You compromise on most. And that's the process. We need to help Mike Johnson succeed. And I'm not pleased with everything he voted for, but I know right now he's a step closer in getting getting that southern border addressed. Here's what I really know. He went as far as he could. And I think the American people realize we need a president back to take the fight, the cat fight, out of Congress. It was Biden who reversed Trump's good authority and fixes on that southern border. It wasn't the United States Congress. It's got to go back into the hands of a good president showing good leadership that we can rely on turning it around overnight. Some of these folks need to be their butts need to be booted right back out of this country as fast as they came in. Others, I think there's merit for some staying. Put them in the military and give them a qualification tenure of sorts. The third thing is make them all pass unequivocally and take an oath to the United States Constitution and what our founding fathers worked hundreds of years to create that is being destroyed overnight by a select few on the campus that do not represent this nation's majority, either this nation's majority in faith, 70% of it, 65-70% of it is Christian. And so why are we allowing a minority faith of any nation to come in here and dominate and control the authorities of the college and university administrations?
Gene, we're going to have to leave it right there. We're going to have to leave it there. The clock is winding down. Timothy and I have to rock on, and you can rock on as well, but not with us for the rest of this hour. But we'll be looking forward to your next turn here at State of the Nation. Be sure and check out the Grassroots Truthcast with Gene Valentino. Go to GeneValentino.com for all things Gene Valentino. And Gene, thanks for being here with us once again.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
Johnny Vedmore, TNT.
If you go back 3 years ago and ask people why they're wearing a face mask, they'll soon give you an answer. But if you go back 4 years ago and ask the same person why they're not wearing a face mask, the two answers would be so extremely distant from each other that it'll boggle your mind. The only thing that changed was that someone on a television told them they might die if they didn't. Part of the reason we're in such dire straits today is the inability for some people to question the basic principles of what they've been told.
Talk that matters. Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Plug in.
Website?
tntradio.live.
Check it out.
Today's News Talk Radio.
It's the coolest.
TNT.
Joining us now with his expert opinion on Donald Trump's trials and travails is the executive director of the Center for Litigation at America First Policy Institute, Michael Berry. Michael previously served as a senior appellate defense attorney in the United States Marine Corps and continues to proudly serve our nation as a member of the Marine Corps Reserve. I'd like to welcome to State of the Nation, Michael Berry.
Thanks for having me on. It's great to be with you.
Michael, you know, just when we think things can't get more ridiculous, Judge Merchan today accused Trump's attorney of losing his credibility because he couldn't provide case law references for something that has never been decided by a court before. The issue, you know, I think Trump's attorney blew it because he said, Your Honor, that issue's not justiciable. It's never been brought before a tribunal. Of course, I don't have any precedent to cite for you. And I'm talking, of course, about the judge asking for precedent that reposting a post on Truth Social doesn't constitute speech.
Look, everything about these cases, all of the cases against President Trump are really without precedent, right? I mean, it's the first time in American history that we've had the far left acting in concert with the administration, doing everything in their power to keep President Trump off the ballot. Because we know that the one thing that the left can't do is beat President Trump in a fair fight at the ballot box. So what do they resort to? Well, the next best thing is to keep him from being on the ballot. They tried it in Colorado. That case went to the Supreme Court. That was rejected. We've got another oral argument the day after tomorrow at the Supreme Court to decide whether or not President Trump is immune, just as every president in the history of this country has been, from his acts while he was president. And now you have this DA in Manhattan, Alvin Bragg, who, by the way, for those keeping score at home, the Department of Justice, Merrick Garland's Department of Justice, refused to take this case. And yet, over a bookkeeping clerical error, the Manhattan DA has decided this is now a felony level offense. So again, to go back to your question, there really isn't anything about this case that has a whole lot of legal precedent. And so I don't fault the attorneys for not being able to point to anything. And the judge's comment about you're losing your credibility, I mean, again, it just goes to show how slanted the judge, the prosecutor, and I would dare even say probably the jury are against President Trump. He's not going to get a fair trial in Manhattan.
Yeah, I let off with Joe Hoff by asking if an attorney, if a judge that has no credibility accuses you of losing your credibility, have you really lost your credibility?
It's the ultimate double negative, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, two lefts don't make a right. Okay. So that's essentially what we have here. And look, every single day that President Trump spends in court and every dollar he has to spend on attorneys fighting legal fees, fighting Eighth Amendment violation fines, right, is time and money he cannot spend campaigning. And that's exactly what the left wants, because every day that President Trump is tied up in court, whether it's in Florida, Manhattan, or the Supreme Court of the United States, is a day that the other guy gets to be out on the campaign trail doing whatever he wants, raising money. And so it's never been a fair fight from the beginning, because they know they cannot beat President Trump in a fair fight.
You know, I've been kind of just zooming out for a minute here. Earlier today, I was looking through a list of 25 of the worst things facing America right now. And one of them was loss of trust in institutions. And it strikes me when I think about that as an overall overarching topic, and then we look at this as an example of it. I mean, this is a fantastic example of that. But I mean, what does it say about our system, our legal system, our system of government, that they're willing to throw, you know, the entirety basically of public trust in justice under the bus just to you know, get this one guy?
You know, there's a term that's being used a lot today, the two-tier system of justice, right? And people ask me all the time, what does that term mean, two-tier system of justice? And in its simplest terms, what it means is the government says that there are going to be rules for some, but not for others. And what does that look like in practical terms? Well, in New York City, where Alvin Bragg is a district attorney, they've experienced an uptick in violent crimes of nearly 30%, right? Just in 2022, they had a 29% uptick in violent crimes. We're talking carjackings, assaults, right? Burglary, et cetera. And yet he's put out a memo saying there are certain categories of crime that he just simply refuses to prosecute. If you sell drugs, he's not going to prosecute you. Prostitution, he's not going to prosecute you. Resisting arrest, right? Talk about respect for institutions and respect for law enforcement. You resist arrest, he's not going to prosecute you. But you make a bookkeeping error, he's going to throw the book at you. That is what a two-tier system of justice looks like. And one other point, we go back, you talk about credibility and how the judge was talking about this witness's this attorney's credibility. You know, I believe it was it was Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, former Supreme Court justice, who once said, right, the only power that judges in America have is their credibility and their legitimacy. because they don't have the power of the purse and they don't have the power of the sword. So the only way people will actually respect the judicial system in this country is if the courts are legitimate and that what they do is respected and is seen as trustworthy and credible by the American people. And we are losing that so quickly with these show trials against President Trump and against other just upstanding American citizens who just want to get on with their lives.
Absolutely. We've got more with you right after these incoming headlines on State of the Nation, right here on Today's News Talk, TNT.
What a news day this is turning out to be.
Let's finish it.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The U.S. Supreme Court has declined to review a legal challenge aimed at disqualifying former President Donald Trump from appearing on the presidential ballot in Arizona due to allegations related to the events of January 6, 2021. Deputy Assistant Secretary Jung Pak, a senior U.S. diplomat and the State Department's top official for North Korea, has expressed concerns about the deepening relationship between Russia and North Korea.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365, we never stop sifting fact from fiction.
Misinformation from the truth.
From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, this is TNT Radio.
Andy, persecuting attorney Joshua Silverstein slipped today and accidentally told the truth when he said that the real crime is that Trump conspired to illegally support his campaign in 2016. That is on top of the fact that this was a misdemeanor, that the statute of limitations had expired. So basically, they passed a bill of attainder, a law that only pertained to one person, and reinstated the statute of limitations if you could prove that there was a crime that was in furtherance of another crime. And it's all patched together with duct tape and bubble gum. Follow me here on this bill of attainder. Can't an argument be made that the law against bills of attainder has been violated here because the 14th Amendment applies the United States Constitution to the states? This is a state trial. And a bill of attainder is a law to which only one person is going to be subjected. Donald Trump is the only person that is subjected to criminal and civil liability in the eyes of the federal and state governments. How does this not fail the bill of attainder clause?
Well, nothing about this case passes the smell test, right? I mean, you're a basic law student who's probably not in class right now in Columbia University because they've had to go virtual, right, because of all the protests. But that's a different issue for a different day. Look, I mean, there's nothing about it. It's not a felony to begin with. And they've decided somehow, well, let's turn it into a felony. Oh, the statute of limitations has passed. And so what do? They do the legal equivalent of drawing a bow, an arrow, firing it wherever it lands. They paint a target, right, around wherever it lands and says, oh, look, right, we've got our guy. And you know what the one offense that President Trump is guilty of in the eyes of the left? The ultimate offense, and that is he has decided to run for re-election. Yeah. He's decided to run for president. And they're saying the quiet part out loud now, that if he were not running for president this November, none of this would be happening, right? I mean, it's the ultimate, the beatings will stop when morale improves, right? And so if he weren't running for president, we wouldn't be doing this. But because he's
running for president. Yeah, that's what I mean when I say that our friend Josh slipped and accidentally told the truth today.
Yeah. They're saying it out loud now because they believe that the ends justify the means, right? Whatever it takes to, as Letitia James campaigned on, to get Trump, right? Whatever it takes for us to get him, we will do it because we believe that the ends justify the means. We've got to keep him off the ballot. I think earlier we mentioned Arizona. I mentioned Colorado. I think at last count, there were 31 states that had taken legal action to try to prevent Donald Trump from being on the presidential ballot this November. When people say, well, you talk about lawfare. What is lawfare? That is what lawfare looks like. 31 states trying to keep the former president of the United States from being on the ballot for re-election. That is what lawfare looks like. And unfortunately, all we're left with is our court system, right? This court system that, as you pointed out, is starting to lose some credibility and legitimacy in the eyes of the public. So hopefully on Thursday at the Supreme Court and beyond, we're going to start getting some positive results, whether it's in the civil fine trial, this show trial in Manhattan, the case in Florida, the one in New York. And I think President Trump himself said it best, right? At the end of the day, they're really after all of us. They're after our rights. They're after our freedoms. He just happens to be standing in the way.
And I think you may have just answered this question, but maybe you could elaborate. What's at stake if the Supreme Court doesn't come down the way that many of us are hoping they will?
Well, I certainly believe that the Supreme Court will rule that President Trump is immune, but I would not say that it is a slam dunk case. I don't think it's as slam dunk as Trump v. Anderson. That was the one where Colorado tried to keep him off the ballot. Using Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. That was a slam dunk case, and as we saw with the outcome. So this one, I think, is a much closer call. And to answer your question, if they rule that he's not immune, it's Katie bar the door. You know, I mean, you want to talk about a threat to democracy, right? When the justice system in this country is able to be weaponized as it has to go after a former president purely for political revenge, right? Then I think all bets are off. And toward that point,
we learned today about a rape charge against Joe Biden. Now it's 30 years old, just like the E. Jean Carroll nonsense was. So I'm sick and tired of Republicans playing nice while the Democrats steal their lunch money. What's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander, Michael.
Amen to that. I mean, I look, as a Marine, and as a military historian, I'm always the one, you know, pounding the beat that I'm sick and tired of Dunkirk. It's time for Normandy, right? We need to have a Normandy mindset. And I mean that in the legal and ethical sense of let's use of every tool at our disposal. Why can't we use the same tools that the left uses to our advantage, right? For too long, we continue to play whack-a-mole. We continue to be reactionary and be on the defense. When these very same laws and tools that are at our disposal, we need to start using them to put the left on their heels.
Yeah. You know, I mean, if we're going to start taking away indemnity from past presidents, that would be one thing if we were going to be honest about it, right? If we were going to line up all the living presidents and really look at the darkest, you know, worst parts of their administrations. That would be kind of interesting, you know, in a parallel universe. It's like, all right, let's put it all on the table and see how they stack up, right? Joe Biden, we could even go back, you know, through his whole career and do that with them. But we all know well and good that's not the way this is going to work out. If it does go bad, anyone on the left and anyone, you know, previous presidents, be they, you know, red, blue, if they served any globalist purposes or intelligence purposes, that's not going to happen to them.
Look, this all ties together. What you just said and what we've been talking about all ties together. We don't need to go back very far to look at presidents who have been derelict in their duty, right? Yeah. Joe Biden, chief among them, he has failed to secure the border. We've had more than 11 million illegal aliens cross our border during his administration, right? It's been an invasion. And I mean, I'm in Texas. I can tell you, right? It's happening every single day. The economy is a disaster. Look at gas prices. Look at food prices. Look at inflation. It's out of control. We've got ships running into bridges and collapsing them. The infrastructure is starting to fail. Doors are falling off of airplanes. All of this is happening under Joe Biden's watch, okay? So he's been derelict in his duty. But the thing is, he doesn't want anybody talking about that. The legacy media is entirely complicit in refusing to talk about that because all he wants people to focus on and all the legacy media want people to focus on are these show trials. So they're working exactly as the left has planned and has concocted all along. If we can create this smoke and mirror shell game, everybody look over here, pay no attention to the man behind the green curtain or the man that's falling down the stairs.
Well, Michael, that's why we here at TNT are the counterpoint, and we're trying to get the word out. We greatly appreciate you coming on to help us do that. Just quickly, because we got about 30 seconds left. I know you're not only a military historian, but you're also a military attorney. Can you finally put to rest once and for all the ridiculous notion that Donald Trump allowed the 2020 election to be stolen to expose people, and that these cases are him laying some elaborate trap, and that people have been exposed and caught and have been executed at Gitmo? Can you please finally lay to rest that nonsense?
Well, that's actually the first I've heard of that. So that's a new one for me. So I'm sorry.
No executions at Gitmo is what you're saying.
No, I have friends and military colleagues who have served at Gitmo, and they would be the first to tell you that's the first any of us have heard anything about that.
You might run in some saner circles than we do.
Yeah. So, folks, check out the America First Policy Institute. Michael, can't thank you enough for your expert analysis. We look forward to having you back on State of the Nation very soon.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be right back on today's News Talk, TNT.
Not see it coming. It's pre-diabetes, and it captures 1 in 3 adults. You may not even know you have it, but you can escape. Take the 1-minute pre-diabetes risk test to know where you stand. With early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received 2 stents in my arteries, stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk, TNT.
All right, 3 million children in Haiti are in need of humanitarian assistance as continuing gang violence hampers aid delivery. The head of the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, is saying this right now. Catherine Russell said the situation in gang-wrecked Haiti is catastrophic and growing worse by the day. Joining State of the Nation now is the founder and president of Mission of Hope, the largest NGO in Haiti, rejoining us, Brad Johnson. Brad, welcome back to State of the Nation. Great to see you. I've been looking through some articles and headlines today, and my goodness, what is going on in Haiti? What is going on in Port-au-Prince? I'm seeing things like hospitals being closed, universities and libraries being looted, pharmacies being torched. I mean, can you give us some clarity about what's going on here and what your organization is up against right now?
Yeah. So first of all, thank you for having me back on. It's good to be here to give the people of Haiti a voice in what's going on. What we're seeing is it continues to spiral the wrong way. The gangs are coming in and taking more control. It's running people out. There's 362,000 people that have been displaced from their homes. That's moms and children that have been run out of where they've lived their entire lives, what they've known. 4.9 million people that are in food insecurity. And this is the most staggering one. 1.4 million people that are on the steps of famine, meaning they are literally about to die from starvation. And that's because the gangs have taken control of the main port in Port-au-Prince, the airport in Port-au-Prince, and therefore goods and services are really hard to get in, if at all, in Port-au-Prince. And to your point, hospitals, people that need healthcare, that need just their basic checkups right now of hypertension and diabetes, they can't get to a doctor because the gangs are occupying the streets and shutting it down.
Yeah, Brad, I think perhaps the greatest, I'm not even going to say misperception, but the greatest delusion that most Americans labor under is that civilization is the norm, that civilization is solid and stolid, that it's permanent, that it's here to stay. Haiti shows us just how badly things can spiral out of control. We saw it here in the Biden administration and the Obama administration with all of the rioting, the mostly peaceful riots, but still civilization didn't completely break down here the way it has in Haiti. But Haiti's really the canary in the coal mine, isn't it?
Well, you know, Haiti has had so many natural disasters and then man-made disasters that have happened. You know, this really started with the assassination of the president, and everyone in the world just kind of looked the other way. And then it spiraled from there, where you didn't have an elected leader in the country that could lead the people and stand up for what is right. And today we have what we do, where we have so many people, families, 500,000 school children that can't go to school today. And that perpetuates the problem as we go forward.
Yeah, it's it looks really bad. Non-governmental groups say that armed groups now control an estimated 90% of the city. And according to UNICEF, 2.7 million people live in areas under effective gang control, with children often becoming the victims of their attacks. And it looks to me from what I'm reading today, maybe you can fill me in, but that the there's supposed to be an election to rectify this, but with this much gang activity and gangs being in control of this much, it hasn't happened yet. So maybe an update on the presidential factor, and also like these gang leaders, you know, I mean, with a name like Barbecue, this question probably is not going to make much sense, but what do they want? Are they looking to cause famine? Are they looking to just take over? Is this just a pure manifestation of gang chaos? I mean, what's the end game for these people?
Yeah, so politically, the biggest issue we have is that Haiti can't have fair elections without peace and people being able to move to go and vote. And so you have zero elected officials. They have appointed a commission that now hopefully will start to bring some order. But with that, that's what perpetuates all the problems we're seeing in Haiti. You have people, literally children, that we're getting reports that are in their homes with gunfire over their heads. And so when you look at it that way, you start to understand the plight of the Haitian people. They've had no one that they can call or no one that they can go to that's going to come to their aid. So it is a breakdown from the political cycle, but at the same time, it's now become one of the greatest humanitarian crises that's in our hemisphere.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, these numbers are staggering. UNICEF data indicates that anywhere from 30 to 50% of armed groups in Haiti currently have children within their ranks. So not only are we seeing children starving to death, potentially famine setting in, you know, random acts of violence and, you know, just being in the wrong place at the wrong time. But now they're actually children are being forced into these gangs. I mean, what are you hearing from your people? I know you've got people that work for you out there that, you know, are helping make sure that the children that are in your purview are safe. I mean, what are they up against?
Yeah, so we have over 300 full-time Haitian staff that are in Haiti working tirelessly to still deliver 125,000 meals a day. Just in the last 2 weeks, they've given 640,000 meals to those that are displaced. But to answer your question about the gangs, these are young men that are leaders leading the wrong things. And so they didn't have the opportunity to lead the right things. Many of them were that we didn't have the opportunity to educate them. So they're young men that weren't educated, that were trying to find a way. And with the vacuum that happened with leaders leaving Haiti, starting with the assassination of the president, the young man stood up and they started to try to find a way to provide. Some of them have stood against the gangs. Others have joined the gangs. Now, many of the young men that you spoke of, the children that are in these gangs, didn't have an option. They were forced to join the gangs. It was either lose your home, lose your family, or become a part of the gang. So many of them are again, wanting opportunity. They didn't have the right opportunities. And this is the only opportunity that's provided them a way many times to stay alive and to have any kind of provisions.
How are your people? You mentioned all the people you've got giving out the meals. How are your staff doing under the conditions?
Yeah, you know, our staff, they are committed to being in Haiti. Many of them could leave Haiti. They have visas or they're U.S. citizens. They could leave. They choose to stay because they believe that God's called them there to see the nation change. And what we're seeing them do is just this past week, they bought over 500,000 meals locally to serve those that are there. So we're seeing them operate very differently than they would have because the roads are closed, but they're still able to get the needed aid to the people that we have contact with. The thing that's heartbreaking, though, is that we have 1,700 distribution points throughout the country, and we have 35 containers sitting here in the United States. It costs 9 cents a meal to get it there, and we don't have the funding to get it to them. That's millions of meals when you have over a million people that are steps away from a famine. So our team stands ready. They're there. They're committed. And we just got to continue to resource them so they can get the much needed supplies to those that are at greatest need.
That was going to be my next question is about those containers. You're still looking for funds to get those over there.
We are. If you go to missionofhope.com, you can click on donate. It literally is 9 cents a meal. It costs us about $25,000 a container, which is 277,000 meals that we ship from here. They go through the north port of Port of Haiti, and they come down, and we go through the network, which is called our Haiti One Network. It's made up of churches and groups all over the country that are still there, and they want to help the people.
And is it difficult to get your shipments to all those locations with all this strife going on? Are there certain areas you're unable to reach?
There are some areas that we're unable to reach, but our team has found incredible ways to get around many of the roadblocks and get food to the most needed. Again, so many people, 362,000 have left Port-au-Prince area and now are living elsewhere, and we're trying to meet those needs as well. Still continuing to feed the 125,000 kids. But yeah, there's definitely obstacles, but that's where we've seen our team's leadership. And when they've stepped in and they're still able to accomplish the tasks that they were given and more, just doing it very differently. But it by far is one of the most challenging times we've seen. We just had one of our national directors in last week from Haiti. He's back now. And he said he's getting calls from people that were strong men that worked for us. And now they look like a stick because they haven't been able to get the right food and they're trying to take care of their families. So it's honestly heartbreaking to see where the country is. And Haiti needs someone that'll just stand up and say, we want to see the country changed with you and we believe in you and give them the opportunity because the people of Haiti are resilient and they will bounce back from this when they're given the opportunity to do so.
What do you think that opportunity looks like? I mean, I know there was some clashes between police and gang members mm-hmm. in the vicinity of the National Palace where that transitional council is supposed to be sworn in. Can those people be protected? Is there enough police to protect those people and start to rebuild? Or is this going to require some sort of, you know, foreign aid and influence to rectify?
I believe that the people of Haiti are strong, but there's too many big guns and money that have been shipped in from all around. And so with that, I think there's going to have to be a foreign intervention of some point to help the people stabilize and give them the opportunity to lead their country. I don't believe it's an occupation. I believe it's a force that needs to go in and help the government that they've put in, this council, to have elections, bring peace. And then we'll see the people of Haiti start to rise up and lead themselves. All they're lacking is the opportunity and the infrastructure. If we give the people the infrastructure, we'll see them do incredible things with it.
At the risk of sounding glib, I have a president and a vice president they could borrow.
I'm sure you do.
Sorry. Yeah.
Well, and we do. I mean, but honestly, the people of Haiti, what they need is they need someone that focuses on them. And I think there's those leaders that are there, but right now they don't have the opportunity to stand up and lead. And that's what we're asking for.
What is the political situation there? Do you have leaders in exile? Are there people that are suitable to stepping up and becoming president if the gang issue can be resolved? Are there leaders? Do you have enough people to be senators and stand up a government?
Yeah, there for sure are. There's great leaders in Haiti. There's great businessmen and women. There's former political leaders. There's NGO leaders. There's people that love the country and can lead the country. But right now, again, it's not even possible to have elections at any level. It's from the president on down to the regional levels. There's no elected officials. So we have to, for the will of the people to be heard, we have to have a stabilization of the country that'll then give them the opportunity to hold those elections peacefully and let the will of the people be heard.
Absolutely. So how did the gangs come to have so much domination? I mean, I know there's a series of events, but I mean, in our, you know, we got about 4 minutes left. Can you briefly explain how this happened?
Yeah, again, I firmly believe that the gangs are there today because organizations like us didn't have the resources to educate them. What you don't see is young men and women that went through our technical school and got jobs. We had 80% employment coming out of our technical school in a country of 20% employment. So that's miraculous in and of itself. But it shows you that when they have the training and the tools to be successful, they will get employment and then they can lead. So what happened is you had so many young men that weren't educated, that didn't have the economic opportunities. And some of that is for the structure of the government that didn't give them the stability they needed. But then with the collapse of the government, with the assassination of the president, now they had no options. And so these young men started with a few gangs, and then other gangs formed. Some gangs were formed to protect their areas. They weren't really trying to take anything over. They just didn't want the bad gangs to come in. But now you have 90% of Port-au-Prince gang controlled, and it's the worst we've ever seen in my lifetime. And one of our directors is 80 in his lifetime. He's never seen anything like this in the country of Haiti. And the good news is here, well, there's the people of America, their hearts have been moved. In the last few months, we've had in 28 locations, people pack 1.17 million meals that were en route to Haiti. So there is some good of what's happening here, but we've got to get behind the people of Haiti more and help them be able to make it today with food and nutrition. But then as we turn the corner and we can bring them stability and we can see the country reopen, now we need to lean in with that education and what we believe is Christ-centered education so that they can grow, they understand what it means to love their country and love God, and then serve both God and country well.
Very well said. Very well said, Brad. In our final minute here, give us any final thoughts and make sure people know how to get to Mission of Hope. And we really encourage you to do that. I mean, did you hear what Brad said? 9 cents is a meal. I mean, think about the cost of your latte and how many meals that could be. And I'm hoping you could afford 2 lattes so you don't have to give one up and you can still contribute over there. Brad, go ahead. Take us out. Give us anything we need to know in the last minute.
Yeah, well, I the people of Haiti are incredible people. They're family for us. And I can tell you right now, if you could imagine being a mom and your baby has nothing to eat, her prayer right now is that she can just feed her families. And so for us at Mission of Hope, we want to bring hope by getting food to them today because that's their immediate need, supporting them as we go forward. But you can do that at going to missionofhope.com and helping us ship those 35 containers that we have to feed literally millions of people and bring hope to them.
All right. Thank you so much, Brad Johnson. We really appreciate your input and sharing this harrowing and scary tale, but this is the reality This is the reality. So get on over there and help them out at missionofhope.com. Brad, we'll look forward to you returning for an update here. And again, please get out there and help them. Haiti is in a terrible situation here, and it needs to be rectified. That's it for this edition of State of the Nation. For myself, Brian McClain, and Timothy Shea, we're wishing you a wonderful evening, and stay tuned for the Jason Burmis Show coming up next on today's News Talk TNT.